This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
The great baseball savant of ESPN, Jeff Passan, joins us right now on the show. Jeff, how are you doing today?
Listen, if we get 8 other Jews along with me and Peter, we could have a minion.
Hello. Or a mignon.
Or a mignon if you want. That's a fancy minion, right?
A French minion. In Montreal.
You're familiar with the work of Jeff Fletcher of the Orange County Register, right?
I am.
Well, he just reported that the Angels TV broadcaster Victor Rojas revealed that he had an interview for the GM job. I've been saying for years, Jeff, that I would be a brilliant GM. Brilliant, not good, but just one of the best of all time. So can we push that narrative through you a little bit?
No.
Thank you.
Victor Rojas, I don't think most people realize this, and I know this because I was interning at the Newark Star-Ledger in the summer of 2000, and Victor Rojas was the assistant general manager, I believe, for the Newark Bears, who that year had Jose Canseco and a bunch of other just turds who had fallen out of baseball. And that is the first time I met Victor Rojas, and he was actually terrible to me. Just
really
mistreated me. Yeah,
why?
Terrible.
What did he do?
I was 20, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I don't know that I was like arrogant or anything like that. I was probably a little snide though. Like, I mean, I'm sitting here 20 years later calling Jose Canseco a turd. So, I mean, there is that. But it was not a great impression. But I haven't talked with Victor much, but he seems like a very nice guy. So. It's like me and you, Michael. As long as you keep calling me second best, there will be a time that I will forgive you. It's just not right now.
But what kind of ego do you have that you don't want to take second best? Second best when the best is a Hall of Famer.
What kind of general manager would he be, Jeff, to think that you're the second best guest?
Clearly, his talent evaluation is questionable.
Right.
Clearly, if someone's bringing up ego, there may be a little hint of issues there with
him. Oh.
May be inclined to make some unilateral decisions that otherwise would be best made by consensus.
Wow.
Interesting.
You know, I feel like there's just a little bit of like boss in him. You know, it's called the Michael K. Show.
Oh.
Not Michael K. and Friends, not Michael K. and Company, not, you know, Michael.
Don refuses Keith, that.
Not Michael, Peter, and Don.
Don refuses a with.
I will never accept a with or featuring in the name.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
But he would accept an and.
About, I would accept an and.
I was just going to say, what about the and? Okay,
and yes.
Okay.
With
he,
and
he would even take an ampersand, but he will not take a with.
Can I be honest? I almost feel like featuring is even better than an and. Like, if you're being featured, that means that you are clearly an important part of the show. And it just seems like you're kind of an afterthought.
Very well put. All right, let's talk some baseball first. So Gausman takes the qualifying offer. So does Stroman. Now, there are others that didn't. Springer didn't. Bauer didn't. DJ LeMahieu didn't. Did Stroman take it because he knew that money wasn't out there, or did he all of a sudden fall in love with Steve Cohen because of that great performance yesterday?
I think if there were a deal that Marcus Stroman saw as representative for what he believes he's worth long term, he would have turned down the qualifying offer. And I think this speaks to two things, Michael. Number one, a year at $19 million in this market is a pretty good outcome. And that ties into the second part. Free agency is going to be a bloodbath this offseason. There are going to be like 5 guys who get paid, and the rest are just going to be left sitting there, not scraping for jobs. You know, Liam Hendricks is going to be fine. Nelson Cruz is going to be fine. Tanaka is going to get paid. But then we get to like Justin Turner and Tommy La Stella and the relievers, even a guy. So I'm going to go to a guy like Charlie Morton. What do you think the Yankees or the Mets, both of whom I think can, should, and will be in on Charlie Morton, pay him?
I would say 8 to 10 a year.
See, that's interesting. That's low.
But he turned down, I mean, the Rays wouldn't give him 15.
Yeah, but they're the Rays, and these are the Yankees and the Cohen Mets.
Right.
And beyond that, I think Charlie Morton, so Charlie lives in Bradenton, Florida. I think he'd like to go back to the Rays. I think the Atlanta Braves are a very interesting team with him. I think the Washington Nationals could be in there as well, and the Yankees and the Mets. To me, those are the five likeliest candidates for Charlie Morton. And if I'm any of those teams, maybe you can take the Nats out of the mix because they already have, with Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin, a pretty formidable top three. If I'm any of those other four teams, though, like, Charlie Morton's a guy who I am spending a lot of time looking at, a lot of energy, and frankly, a pretty good chunk of money, too, because I think he's worth it. It's only going to be for 1 year. He's not looking for
long-term. What do you think Tanaka's going to get? I'm curious to hear this. He's not going to get 20 a year like last year, right?
Oh, no. He's the biggest mystery to me this offseason. Like, I think I have a pretty decent sense of what Springer's going to cost and Real Muto and DJ LeMahieu. Tanaka, I just honestly don't know. And if there's going to be a team that misses out on guys, and with Gausman and Stroman off the market, you know, that takes two of the top pitchers out of the fray, and Bauer's sort of in his own stratosphere, Tanaka's in like that next group. And I wonder how many years, and I wonder what the AAV is. And I wonder all these things, especially because he's been doing it with a torn elbow ligament.
Right.
Like the fact that he has pitched as well as he has with a partially torn UCL is a testament to his toughness, but also a huge question mark for him. And I really do wonder if he's going to be in a different uniform next year, because I haven't gotten a great sense that the Yankees are inclined to bring him back at this point.
All right, back to Stroman and just his 18.9. In the Wilpon years, you'd say, okay, that pretty much straps them for really being that competitive in free agency. But that's not the case with Cohen. But he says he doesn't want to spend like a drunken sailor. So does this take them out of going out and getting a Bauer? Does this take them out of competing for DJ LeMahieu? What line was drawn by throwing $18.9 million on top of the 2021 salary?
Can I answer that second and go back to the drunken sailor comment first? Because I took away something from the Cohen press conference that I don't know if I saw it pointed out elsewhere. He talked about not wanting to spend like a drunken sailor, but he also talked about going and looking at other teams that may have guys on their books who have become too expensive for them and taking advantage of that. Or, and I proposed this in a column that I wrote right before free agency hit. To me, one of the greatest things that the Mets could do is not necessarily take all of this new Steve Cohen money and go out and spend it on the 2021 Mets. Like, listen, they should be in on George Springer. They are. They should be in on Trevor Bauer. They are. They should be in on JT Realmuto. They are. But to me, if there is a contract on the books with another team that the Mets can say, we'll pay it as long as you give us a couple prospects along with it for our inconvenience, that to me is where you can best take advantage of this money that they're finally getting to spend. It's not just going out and spending it in free agency. Let's remember, guys, Steve Cohen made his money by finding inefficiencies in markets, right? And the most, like, the worst market by far for a baseball team is free agency. You get the least bang for your buck by going out and spending on guys who are in the latter half of their careers, typically. It's why, you know, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado got paid as much as they did because they signed at 26 years old. It's why if Juan Soto hits free agency, he's probably going to get the biggest contract ever because he's going to be like 25 years old. Going out and spending in free agency is not always a panacea. And so to think that getting Springer and Real Muto and Bauer or two of the three is something that the Mets are really focused on doing, it just doesn't seem very Steve Cohen-ish as an investor to me. And so that's why I'm looking for the Mets in terms of trades as much as I am free agency.
And then Don asked you about Stroman.
Oh, hey, look, anytime you can get a guy for a year, it's not a bad deal. Now, I do wonder with Marcus Stroman, he hasn't pitched in a year. And that, I think, is a big part of why that market didn't necessarily materialize in free agency for him. Because I think that there are understandable concerns. But giving him the qualifying offer, it was not an unreasonable bet. I think there are probably better places where they could have spent that $19 million. But I think with Marcus Stroman, what you're going to get is a guy who's going to start 30-plus games and who's going to pitch innings and who's going to be good to very good. And when you've got Jake DeGrom at the top of the rotation, and when you've got Noah Syndergaard hopefully coming back healthy, and when you've got Peterson, and when you've got Lugo, and when you've got Matt, like, they got enough arms right now to be decent. Now, if you add Trevor Bauer to the mix, all of a sudden, I think the Braves are getting scared, and I think the Nationals are getting scared, and I think the Phillies are getting scared, and I think the Marlins are getting scared. And the idea that the Mets are going to come out immediately at the beginning of the Steve Cohen era and become this great team, that to me feels a little far-fetched. But I think they're going to lay the groundwork for a couple years down the road where we're going to see them become that juggernaut. And right now, they're going to be good to better than good.
Talking with Jeff Passan of ESPN here on the Michael Kay Show. So, Jeff, you said you think you know what LeMahieu is going to get. Yankee fans obviously very nervous about this. What do you think he's going to get, and do you think he'll get it from the Yanks?
DJ LeMahieu is the New York Yankees' top priority. There's absolutely no question about that. And I think when you've got the skills that he does, when you've got the performance that he does, when you've got the versatility that he does, he's the kind of guy who can go out into the market and get multiple multi-year offers from teams that are willing to pay $20-plus million dollars a year. I think when it's all said and done, we're probably talking a four-year deal, maybe if the bidding gets hot and heavy, 5 years. At 20 plus, but to me, I think Kylie McDaniel, who's our great prospects writer and scout at ESPN, nailed it. He said 4 years, $88 million, and I think he's going to be within 10% at most of where DJ LeMahieu winds up.
But if it goes to five, as much as the Yankees want him, do you give a 32-year-old a five-year contract?
I mean, if you really want him, yeah. Like, if you feel like if you're the New York Yankees, Michael, and he is your number one priority, and you've got a finite amount of time with Aaron Judge, and you've got question marks with Gary Sanchez, and you've got this window. Listen, I don't think the Yankees window is closing anytime soon, but I think they feel like they have a championship caliber ball club right now. Are you really going to lose a guy over what probably would amount to being a marginal $10 to $12 million? Because I think if he gets that fifth year, the average annual value bumps down. So we'd be looking at 5x20 maybe as opposed to 4x88. Are you really going to let $10, $12, $15 million get in the way of getting the guy who you feel like is the most integral part of this offseason? Maybe the answer is yes. Listen, they've done it before, but when they've done that, it's been a difference of $50 or $60 or $70 million. I go look back at Robinson Cano. The Yankees were willing to give him $175 million. He got $240 from the Mariners. They said, peace out, Robbie. You know, you go and enjoy your money elsewhere. I just don't think that sum of money would separate the Yankees from bringing LeMahieu back.
Now, you said could have finite time with Aaron Judge. When you look in your Jeff Passan number one guest crystal ball, how do you see the Aaron Judge Yankees story playing out?
Oh, boy. You know, I think if they were going to sign Aaron Judge to an extension, it probably would have happened already. So he's got four plus years of service now, which means He will play the 2021 season and 2022 season, assuming both of those are played and that there are no labor issues that get in the way, which is eminently a possibility, and will hit free agency. And the, you know, the big issue with Judge is at this point, you're not getting his best years. At least if you look at people who have been like him in the past, if you look at people of his size, if you look at people of his skill set, I'm not saying that Aaron Judge is on a downward slope. What I am saying is that if you were to sign him as a free agent or to an extension right now past the years of control that you have, he's starting that as a 31-year-old. And, you know, if you're going to give him 6 or 7 or 8 years beyond that free agent, or, you know, beyond where his free agency starts, we're talking about getting the guy into his late 30s at that point. And that's what Aaron Judge should be seeking. That's what he should want. And I think that's what the market will bear if he can stay healthy. But isn't that the whole issue here? Isn't that why the Yankees haven't gone out of their way and signed him at this point? Because we still have not, since his rookie season, seen a full year from Aaron Judge. We've seen 112 games in a full season. We've seen 102 games in a full season. And we've seen 28 games in a 60-game season. And that, unfortunately, as fluky, as freakish, as ridiculous as some of these injuries may be, as much as they are not chronic, how can you commit long-term to somebody who for 3 consecutive years hasn't shown an ability to stay healthy for a full season? It's just a really tough thing to do. And this is not an indictment on Aaron Judge. He's not trying to get hurt. He takes incredible care of himself, and he's in great shape. It's just it's a rock and a hard place right now for the Yankees as to how they proceed forward, which is why I think you don't have that extension.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Final thing before we let you go, Lindor. It's an interesting mark. I think he's such a phenomenal player, Jeff, but you're going to have to give up significant assets to get him, and there are other shortstops on the market that certainly are not Francisco Lindor, but so yep. Where is he? Where does he end up?
Let's put it this way. I do not think Lindor to the Yankees is going to happen.
Do you think they want him, or they just won't part with what the Indians want?
I think anybody would like to have Francisco Lindor. It's just a question of what the price is. And I think the price is going to be high enough where going after him just doesn't make as much sense for the Yankees, especially when you look at what the Yankees' strength is, right? Like, the thing that the Yankees have over just about everybody in baseball, maybe the Dodgers, the Mets, the Red Sox, the Cubs, you know, there are a few teams that can play in this ballpark, is money. And there are going to be more expensive shortstops on the market next offseason than there are teams to get them. It's not just Lindor who's going to be a free agent after 21. It's Lindor. It's Trevor Story. It's Carlos Correa. It's Javier Baez. It's Corey Seager. Those are 5 all-star caliber MVP vote-getting shortstops right there. And so are the Yankees going to give up somebody like Gleyber Torres right now to get Lindor for a year? It just doesn't make a ton of sense. Look, if you see what the Dodgers did, they gave up Alex Verdugo, who's got a chance to be a pretty good outfielder, and Jeter Downs, who's a pretty solid prospect, to get Mookie Betts, and they ended up signing him and keeping him off the market. But they did that knowing that the rest of the market this offseason, guys, it consists of players in Springer and Real Muto and Bauer who are good, but they're not Mookie Betts. Right. I think if you're the Yankees, you look at Francisco Lindor's availability and you say, is getting Lindor for a year right now and then signing him to the deal that we could get him with as a free agent actually worth giving up what we would have to give up when we have Correa and Seager and Story and Baez potentially out there as well. And just looking at it logically, the answer to that is no.
Well, then the Indians played their hand wrong. I mean, they should have traded him a while ago.
Yeah, I think you could make that argument.
Because they knew they couldn't sign him.
Right. There might be a team, though, that's in a different situation than the Yankees, whose value proposition differs from where New York's is. Like, the Yankees just, like, the reason that people outside of New York hate on the Yankees so much is that the Yankees' money buys them options. It buys them possibilities. And other teams don't necessarily have that. And so if they're going all in on Lindor, it's going to be a far bigger bet than it would be with the Yankees. The Yankees don't have to. That's the thing about them. And if they don't have to, I'm not sure they're going to.
Well, I'll tell you what, you really made a push for number one today. The information that you have dispensed, it's just unbelievable. I don't think you get there, but boy, what a push.
Well, I think he's already there.
All right. I'll take that, Michael. I appreciate that.
Oh, well, you were phenomenal.
I mean, from a man with an ego the size of yours, that's quite something to say.
It is.
It shows when you say something like that, Jeffrey, that you just don't know me. I loathe myself. I do not have a big ego at all. Don could tell you I hate everything about me.
Of everybody I worked with, Jeff, and I work with them all. Like, I worked at both radio stations. I've worked with pretty much everybody. He's got less of an ego than anybody I've ever worked with.
That is actually very true, and all kidding aside, it's one of the reasons that I love you and one of the reasons that I think people listen to this show, because you are an eminently relatable person, and I am glad to be number two. It's wrong,
right.
But it is a huge compliment nevertheless, and Michael K., I do love you.
Love you back. Love you back.
A lot of love.
I wish I liked myself more, but, you know, got to work through that. Have a great day, Jeff.
You guys do the same. Thanks.
All right, take it easy.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.